The following is a paid program.
It's time to talk UK sports with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. Join in the discussion by tweeting your questions to at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com. And you can call 877-904-1080. Now, along with an outstanding lineup of guests and broadcast to the most passionate fan base in America, the Big Blue Nation, here's the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Welcome in to our Wednesday edition of the Leach Report. Going to be a rainy couple of days here in Kentucky, but at least it is very warm. And a big win for the Cats last night, nine in a row now after they dispatched South Carolina 76-48 at Rupp Arena, and head back out on the road Saturday to face Mississippi State. We'll talk about the win for Kentucky last night with John Hale from the Courier-Journal, Chris Fisher from the Cat's Paws, and former Wildcat great Kevin Grevey. That's our guest lineup, presented by Sleep Outfitters. The Leach Report is served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. You can interact with us via Twitter at Leach Report, email leachreport@gmail.com, or you can call 877-904-1080, toll-free anywhere in Kentucky. Wildcat News of the Day, a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. P.J. Washington led the way with 20 points last night, but I think the bigger story was E.J. Montgomery's first career double-double. He hit a three late to give him 11 points, and that made it a double-double because he'd already grabbed 13 rebounds. P.J. was going for a fourth consecutive double-double, but E.J. was gobbling up all the rebounds last night. Happy for him, and it came on the heels of a key contribution that he made in the win down at Florida, so should be surging confidence now for E.J. Montgomery. He's got an array of ways he can score, I think, long-term. You see, he can hit the three. He can score around the basket. Just got to be a little stronger with the ball. Rebounded well, though. And I think one thing that gets underrated with him that we're seeing is his passing ability. Mike and I talked about this last night when he hit, may have been Hero in a backdoor cut, and he saw the pass and made it perfectly. Remember down at Vandy last week, he threw a couple of nice lobs to Nick Richards. So I think there's a real passing skill there for E.J. Montgomery that may emerge down the stretch run of this season. Reed Travis gave them good minutes last night. Nearly had a double-double as he had nine rebounds. And he helped on the defensive effort against Chris Silva. Now, Silva was certainly limited by foul trouble, but he only scored 4 points in the time that he did play. And he came in averaging close to 30 a game over the last four games. South Carolina shot just 36%. Kentucky out-rebounded them 50-27. Came up with 11 steals, 21 offensive rebounds. A couple of interesting things out of Cal's post-game session with us on the radio. I was asking him, I know they chart attempts to rebound, and I was asking him, I said if you chart attempts to assist, that number would be very high for this team because I think they really do share the ball well, and they look for each other. And he went into saying that there's a lot of things that they chart. Attempts to assist is not one of them, but they chart things like what he calls a hockey assist, which is when you make the pass that then leads to a pass that leads to a bucket. So you don't get officially credit for an assist, but they call it a hockey assist. And then he said, ideally, they'd like to get 300 passes in a game. So he remember when he was pounding away at the theme earlier this year about being willing passers, and they've, for the most part, become much better at that. That's one of the things that they chart is trying to get 300 passes. The other thing he talked about is they have four Thursdays left, as he put it. And the way their week works, they're playing on Tuesdays and Saturdays. So day before the game practices are focused on the game plan on Mondays and Fridays. Wednesdays are an off day. Sundays, you know, recovering from even though they'll have a light get-together. They're not going to have a hard practice the day after a game. So the one practice they have that is situated 2 days away from games each week is on Thursday. And so they have, he said, four of those left. Now, there will also be a little time there in the week of the SEC tournament, but essentially about a half a dozen opportunities they have to work on things other than outside of the game plan. and he said there's some things they want to put in. I think you're going to need to see this team get better offensively to be able to get to where they want to go. Nick Richards is the one thing that Cal constantly talks about that can be the difference from taking them from good to great, if you will. But I think they're not shooting it particularly well right now, and Cal said they're going to be, he thinks, at some point facing zone. I think he's right. Mike and I were talking about this on the broadcast last night. Quickly and Hagans aren't shooting it well right now, and so at some point somebody's just going to back off them and just clog up the middle and start to make Kentucky have to beat them, or try to at least make Kentucky have to beat them from the perimeter. So I think they need to get better offensively, but there's still plenty of time to do that. But that's just something to watch over the course of the next month. Football signing day today. Most of the analysts I see are saying Kentucky will land a couple of four-star cornerbacks, Jay Ward and MJ Devonshire. But the wide receiver from Louisiana, Devonta Lee, is expected to sign with LSU. Basketball, there's a consensus building that Anthony Edwards is headed to Georgia. He's going to announce on Monday. John Wall tore his Achilles, or ruptured his Achilles yesterday. And it means he's going to be out probably about another year. And that's really bad news for a guy like John, who relies so much on explosiveness. For DeMarcus, torn Achilles, he's been able to come back from it, but his game's more about just brute force, not the explosiveness that a guy like John Wall needs. So it's a really bad injury for John Wall. So keep your fingers crossed for him. Keep him in your prayers. And the same goes for Alex Poitras' family. His mom needed a new kidney, and his sister donated it. And the operation took place yesterday, and from all reports from Twitter, from Alex, it went very well. So happy for his family, and you can keep them in your prayers as well. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Here's the news off Twitter. MJ Devonshire has committed to Kentucky. So one down for Mark Stoops and company on this second signing day for the upcoming season. We'll come back and visit with John Hale of The Courier on the Leach Report Radio Network. Served up by Wild Eggs and Lexi.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
We go to the Kentucky branded hotline to bring on John Hale from the Courier Journal, courier-journal.com, to talk about the Kentucky basketball win over South Carolina last night. Anything particularly noteworthy that came out of the post-game interview sessions with Cal or the players or Frank Martin, I guess, for that matter?
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. Obviously, there was a lot of talk about E.J. Montgomery after the way he played. I asked E.J. if he knew that he needed that last three to get his double-double, and he said that a few of his teammates had told him that. And John Calipari actually ran that play at the end to get him a shot there, which was interesting because I thought they got the ball right at about 29 seconds left. So, I mean, it might have been a little tight to run the clock out with the score the way it was. But Cal was over there shouting on the sideline like he had called up some play to – get a last-second shot in a tie game, and that was because they were trying to get EJ that shot to get the double-double. So I think that says a lot about what he had done in terms of having that breakout performance, but also wanting to build his confidence. Cal talks all the time about demonstrated performance, and we've seen it in, moments from EJ, like the offensive rebound at Florida, but to do it for, the entire 20 minutes he was in the game and statistically to be rewarded from that, I think was pretty important, and I think it was pretty clear based on that last possession that they thought it was important too.
Yeah, and I guess we had that, I can't remember which game it was earlier this year, where there was about a half a second more on the game clock than the shot clock, and Cal just had, was it Hagans, I think, just throw the ball up in right. The air, and they ended up running and having to run another play for the final second, and I can't remember who it was, hit a shot from midcourt. Montgomery, I made this point earlier, that in addition to the rebounding and the way he can score, he seems to be has some nice passing skills, too. He hit somebody on a backdoor cut last night, and I mentioned the lobs he threw last week down in Vandy.
Yeah, he's a guy who has a ton of talent. It's obvious every time he's on the court that maybe he's physically not ready yet to bash with these, older, more experienced post guys in the SEC every game, although, South Carolina has a reputation as one of the most physical teams in the league, and he obviously did really well last night. But when he's on the court and bursts, you can see he makes great passes, like the two lobs at Vanderbilt to Nick Richards last week. He hits open guys. He had an assist last night in that run at the end of the first half that they stretched the lead from 1 to 10 with him in the game in the last 5 minutes. And then he makes moves around the post too with the ball in terms of like putting it on the floor and dribbling it and getting it open and that's his back to the basket occasionally that show you that he has all this potential. And there's a reason he was the number nine recruit in the country coming into the year. He's obviously a little bit of a work in progress still, but it's easy to see in these brief clips that if he sticks around for another year at Kentucky, he's going to be really, really good.
Kentucky had the 30-point lead at halftime down at Vanderbilt last week, and Cal joked that he told his guys he didn't want them playing that well that early. And defensively, I think you could certainly make the case that they are you know, nearing a peak. I don't know if they're going to get a ton better defensively. They're playing awfully well right now. But I think there's a plenty of upside left on the offensive end of the court.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've seen P.J. Washington obviously round in the form the last four or five games. Ashton Hagans has actually maybe taken a step back the last couple games offensively after what he had done for most of the month before that. But there's still guys like Keldon Johnson, I think, you know, has things to figure out, and Cal's been pretty upfront about that. Reed Travis is, for all Cal, but wanted to make sure last night that we were all aware of all the work Reed put in and that he was on an IV, and without him, Chris Silva's probably in the game longer and has much more of an impact. He's a guy who's struggled around the basket a little bit recently in terms of hitting some of those close shots and maybe at times reverted to what he was doing at Stanford in terms of gathering the ball and putting it down when he needs to just go up. So those are two guys, you know, right up in the starting lineup that I think have some room to grow offensively and get better. And let alone guys like Jamal Baker and Emmanuel Quickley coming in and being confident, hitting shots, E.J. Montgomery doing what he did last night. Nick Richards has the ability to catch lobs and, you know, dunk balls. So I think there's definitely some upside on the offensive end of this. And, you know what you're going to get from Ashton Hagans and P.J. Washington. And most nights it appears Tyler Hero, when he's hitting shots at a high rate, we know what he can do. We know what Keldon Johnson can do. But we haven't necessarily seen all those guys do it at the same time. And if they do that at some point this year, it's going to be scary.
Last, I think it's six games, the two freshman point guards are combined under 35% shooting. So that needs to change. Those guys, you know, Ashton didn't have to score the 23 he did down at Georgia, but they have to be able to have enough confidence that they're not turning down shots and bogging down the offense.
Yeah, absolutely, and especially Quickley when he's in. I mean, his job, we've seen it in the probably early in SEC play. He had three or four games in a row there where he came in and hit a huge three that either, you know, gave him a lead or stretched a lead a little bit in a key moment. That's his job when he's in the game. Cal's talked so much about the different kinds of point guards, and then Emmanuel's a drifter in terms of, you know, he doesn't necessarily have to play with the ball in his hands, but if he's in that role, he's got to hit shots, and we've seen him do it before. He didn't necessarily do it last night, although Cal said he was really proud of the way he played, even while he missing his shots. But they're going to need him to do that. And then Ashton, when they leave him wide open, he has to hit a decent percentage of those, or it's going to cause problems in terms of the spacing for everybody else in the court.
I thought Quickley did play well last night, even though he didn't hit shots. But he had like four assists, one turnover. He rarely turns the ball over anyway. But I just thought it was good for them to see him get extended run running the team. Because at some point you figure Hagans will, you know, get into early foul trouble in a game, and they'll need Quickley to be able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to need times, and you know, Ashton has looked a little human the last couple games, and obviously when he's not in foul trouble, I think you need him on the court for most of the time. But even if he is, you know, in a decent foul situation, but if you've got six turnovers and a half against a team that's a little better than South Carolina, they're going to need to look at Quickley because he's so good at ball security, like you mentioned, and to see him do what he did last night and running the team and getting guys open shots, that's an important bit of progress for him too. Like I said, we know he can hit threes when he needed occasionally, but he's going to have to do other things if he's playing that featured point guard role when Ashton's on the bench for whatever reason. I think we're seeing him grow into that a little bit.
Kentucky handled Mississippi State pretty easily last month here in Lexington, but I think, and I'd be interested to see how State does tonight against LSU. I think that's in Starkville, but I think this will be a really tough game on Saturday.
Yeah, me too. I did a piece earlier this week where I kind of ranked the last 10 games in terms of their difficulty in this game. Mississippi State, if I'm not mistaken, was third or fourth, just behind the two Tennessee games and LSU. I think they're a good team. Obviously, they've maybe fallen off a little bit since the beginning of SEC play. They're not maybe a top 25 team like we thought they were at one point, but there's a reason that they were in the top 25. And we've seen them. They beat Auburn. They beat Ole Miss. They beat Florida already in SEC play. This is a really good team. And for Kentucky, so many of these other SEC teams left on the schedule are either right on the tournament bubble, and I think Mississippi State's probably safely in the tournament right now, but they're playing for seeding or they're playing to get into the field. And when you get Kentucky at home, that's your chance to get a marquee victory. And Tennessee, too, in the league, obviously, this year. So it's going to be crazy there. It's going to be an atmosphere where they're turned out and they're playing at their top level, I'm sure.
John, thank you much.
Anytime. Thanks for having me, Tom.
You can read the story John referenced about ranking the opponents down the stretch at courier-journal.com. 25 after the top of the hour. Chris Fisher next up on the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
Chris Fisher from the Cat's Paws joins us on Wednesdays. He's next up on the Kentucky Branded Hotline. If you go to the Cat's Paws page, the By the Numbers post from Chris is up there. What numbers in particular are most impressive for the Wildcats, either in this game or just recently?
Well, I think you have to start on the defensive end with what they've been able to do over the last, 6 weeks or so, really starting to shut teams down. And that's something Glenn Coco always talks about, how individual improvement leads to collective improvement. We've seen how much better Kentucky has become defensively over the course of the season. And you look at guys like Tyler Hero, and obviously the emergence of Ashton Hagans has really changed the complexion of this team defensively. But so many guys have improved over the course of the season, and I think you're starting to see Kentucky reap the benefits of that as a collective.
E.J. Montgomery was a very highly touted player, McDonald's All-American coming out of high school, and it's taken a little longer than with some of the other guys, but maybe this is his breakout moment.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's something that John Calipari has been pointing to for the last couple of weeks now, saying that E.J. was going to have a breakthrough, and I think that happened last night with 11 points and 13 rebounds, I think in less than 20 minutes of action off the bench, and really showed what he's capable of at both ends of the floor, and can really what he can contribute to this team off the bench. We had him ranked ahead of Zion Williamson, so that shows you really how highly thought of he was coming out of high school, and there's still some people that think he might have the highest upside of any pro prospect on this Kentucky team. I think he's really, really skilled. He's stepped out and hit a couple threes here over the last few games, and I think as he continues to get stronger and continues to get tougher and acclimate himself to kind of a more physical brand of basketball at the college level, I think you'll continue to see him take off.
We're talking with Chris Fisher from catspaws.com, at Chris Fisher 24/7. We'll continue the discussion about the Cats, get into a little recruiting and more when we come back. Also coming up in the second half of the show today is Kevin Greavy. Kevin, former Wildcat grade that we talked to shortly after that opening loss to Duke. Want to get his perspective on what he sees now, a few months later, out of his alma mater. It's the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
Talking with Chris Fisher of the Kentucky Branded Hotline, catspaws.com. We're talking about the Wildcats' win over South Carolina last night. Now they face three of the better offensive teams in the league. Mississippi State, I think, is sixth in the league in offensive efficiency, and then LSU and Tennessee, I think, maybe are 3-1, respectively. I think that's where the most upside is left for Kentucky in the last month before the tournaments, is on the offensive end of the court.
Yeah, absolutely. There's still a tremendous amount of area of growth for Kentucky offensively. I think, you know, John Calipari's insisted all season long that this is the best shooting team we've had, and as the season has gone along, it just seems like Kentucky more often than not gets a lot of great looks, and still I think is maybe third or fourth as far as 3-point percentage among John Calipari's Kentucky teams, and still some things to, I guess, to figure out on the offensive end of the floor, but a lot of it just comes down to making open shots, and that's not really something we've seen this team do consistently.
And, you know, you think that, you know, quickly, Hero, it's as freshmen, Keldon Johnson's numbers are really good, but Hero and quickly probably a little below what was expected as far as a percentage. I would not be surprised, though, at some point if they heat up.
Oh, absolutely. I definitely think this is a better shooting team than we've seen percentage-wise to this point. And we've seen that happen with other, you know, shooters that have come in. Devin Booker, you know, started off really, really hot early in his freshman year and then kind of hit a lull there for 2 months and then picked it up back toward, you know, the end of that season. But I think that's an adjustment that, you know, these players have to make at the college level. You're not quite as open as you were at the high school level. The pace of play is so much faster. And so I think there's an adjustment to be made there. But you look at what Kentucky's doing defensively and the success they've had here over the last, you know, 6 weeks or so. If they start making shots, they're going to be really, really hard to beat.
Yeah, that's the thing that in a month, if that happens, makes them, I mean, they're already certainly a viable contender for a Final Four and to get the title, and that just kicks the, I guess, their chances up, makes it a much more likely event if that shooting falls into line, right?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the game last night, they won by almost 30 points and shot 41% overall and, you know, only made 5 3-pointers, but if you look, they out-rebounded South Carolina 50-27, and so this team has a lot of different ways that they can beat you, and I think at his core, John Calipari is a defense and rebounding type of coach, and that's kind of been the makeup of most of his Kentucky teams. They're going to grind you out defensively, and if they're making shots, then good luck.
We're going to start to talk more and more about brackets now and bracketology and all of that. And the selection committee this Saturday will unveil its top four in all the regions for the first time. I'm going to throw out a few things and I'll see if you agree on these. I think it's for Kentucky to get a one, it's going to be a little harder than people might think. I think they probably have to get ahead of Tennessee to do it because I think Duke and Virginia, just looking at who they have left, I will be surprised if they would fall enough to fall off the one line. And I think no matter what the numbers are for Gonzaga, if they don't lose, the fact that they have that win over Duke is going to be huge in the eyes of the people on that committee, and I think they're going to get a one, and so that would only leave one left. And I think if Duke wins at Virginia on Saturday, I think there's a really good chance that pretty much will lock them into the number one seed in the East in D.C. because at worst, I think they're probably split with Carolina.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. One thing I'll be interested to see, let's say Kentucky ends up getting a two seed. I know the NCAA selection committee has really been fixated on geography in recent years. I wonder if they send Kentucky out to the West region as the number one two seed against Gonzaga, which will likely be the weakest number one. I think that would be something that, I mean, that would seem fair and logical on paper, but as we know, Selection Sunday doesn't always play out like that. So there will be some monster matchups with a lot of NCAA tournament seeding consequences between Kentucky and Tennessee here over the next month or so, and that'll be really, really fun to see how that shakes out.
I wish they would do it the way you discuss, but I think from what they've said, and we'll see, maybe get a little more insight into this when they have their first appearance on CBS with the chairman of the selection committee on Saturday. But what they've said, essentially, and you look at and Joe Lunardi's latest bracketology, he has Kentucky in the East as the 2 to Duke. And going by what they say, then the top 2 seed, then the first thing they look at is proximity. And then that would put them in the South. But if Virginia's there, then Kentucky could certainly be in the South. But if, say, Michigan, right now Joe's got Michigan as the 2 in the South. If Michigan were ahead of Kentucky, Kentucky was the second 2 seed, they could end up in the East. So I wish they did it on the S-curve. I wish they just looked at that first and foremost.
Yeah, that just makes so much more sense. I mean, this isn't, you know, 1985. I mean, these teams are chartering flights.
Yes.
And, you know, travel certainly isn't as big of an issue as it was maybe at one time. But, you know, I still think there's a decent chance that Kentucky can usurp Tennessee atop the SEC standings. I think, don't get me wrong, Tennessee is very, very good. They're ranked number one in the country for a reason. But they've also had a very favorable SEC schedule to this point. So we're going to find out a lot more, I think, about both of these teams here over the next month or so.
Yeah, if Kentucky could get past Tennessee, then they might well get the one in the South at Louisville, because Kentucky'd have an awful lot of highly regarded wins. If you say, if you could get 2 over Tennessee, and you know, you get a win at Auburn, if you could get a win at Mississippi State this week, Carolina on a neutral court, etc.
Yeah, and I understand the fans want an SEC championship. That means a lot. But if you're Kentucky, you are absolutely playing for that number one seed in the South. At Kentucky, playing in Louisville, playing at the Yum Center, where, you know, they're 4-0. I think they've won their 4 NCAA tournament games by an average of 17 points there. And that place would be an absolute madhouse if Kentucky were able to make it to the regionals. And I would think would be really, really tough to beat there.
Chris, thank you much.
Thanks, Tom.
Chris Fisher, CatsPaws.com, and heading to a break. Kevin Greavy's next up when we return on the Leach Report Radio Network. Served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Find out more about the Voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomEachKY.com.
Welcome back into our show. We are working to land Kevin Greavy as we speak. By the way, Kevin is featured on Oscar Combs' latest podcast. So go to Oscar's website. You can see all of his list of podcasts. I tend to download those and catch up on them when we're traveling. So I'll probably get another one. I'm working on the one that he did with Mike Dodson, our longtime producer right now. So I'll probably get through that one on this trip to Starkville this weekend. And pretty soon I'll be going to the one on Kevin Greavy. Kevin was with us shortly after Kentucky was clobbered by Duke in that opening game, because I wanted to bring him on and get his perspective on his team coming back from a similar type of beating at the start or very early in their 74-75 season at Indiana. It was the Indiana team that would go on to take an undefeated record into the Mideast Regional Final and lose to Kentucky 92-90. So the same team that beat Kentucky by 24 in early December, Kentucky came back and beat them in March in the NCAA tournament. I went back and found the previous year, the NC State team that won the national championship in 74 with David Thompson. They played UCLA, the defending national champion, at the start of that year. Wasn't in the first game, same as Kentucky's game against Indiana. Wasn't the first game, but it was maybe the third or fourth. Anyway, UCLA beat NC State, I want to say, by 27. And then they met again in the Final Four in the national semifinal, and NC State beat the Bruins in the rematch. So in back-to-back years, you had teams lose by more than 20 points very early in the season and come back to beat those same teams in the NCAA tournament. And as we were just talking with Chris Fisher, if Kentucky and Duke get a rematch, there's certainly a possibility it could happen in a regional final. I don't think it would happen before then with the way both seasons are going. But I just look at Duke's schedule. I was looking at some schedules yesterday with Duke and Virginia and other teams. And if Duke wins at Virginia on Saturday, then I think at worst they'd probably split with Carolina, just looking at the games they have left. And I think that would probably keep them at the one line, especially if they had beaten Virginia twice. I don't think there's any way Virginia would get ahead of them. Virginia doesn't have to play Carolina twice, I think. They've got one game left with Carolina. I think that may be in Charlottesville. Their next toughest game probably would be their one at Louisville to end the regular season. As I said, you heard what I said on Gonzaga. Unless they get upset, I think they're going to be a one, mainly because of what they did in the non-conference, and in particular beating Duke out in Maui. I think that's just going to jump off the page. And I think Kentucky's best chance to get a one's probably going to be to get ahead of Tennessee, and probably they might have to do that twice, because I don't think if they would split and then Kentucky would win the rubber match in the SEC tournament, I don't know that they would that might be too late to get credit for it. That's the way it has looked in the past. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Always remember that. We're going to get to a break and come back and have our final segment. Hopefully catch up to Kevin Grevey on the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. With Kevin, so we'll get him rescheduled for another show here in the next week or two. Our Donato slice of Wildcat history. This day in 1993, Kentucky avenged a loss from earlier in the season to Vanderbilt, beating the Doors at Rupp Arena 82-67. Vandy came in ranked 11th in the country, had a star player named Billy McCaffrey, if you remember him. Jamal Mashburn had 17 points and 11 boards to pace Kentucky. One note on MJ Devonshire, the young man from Pennsylvania who is signing with Kentucky today. See, he had 8 punt return touchdowns. So that might be another way that he can contribute when he gets here to Kentucky. Cool thing last night, and Shannon, I'll give you a heads up here, just got a call showing up from Kevin, so you might try him again, and we may be able to get him on for a few minutes here. If you hung around for Cal's radio show last night, then you were treated to something that was really cool. They had a big group of Special Olympics athletes that were there, and they had the team come back out. Apparently Johnny David was one of the folks who helped organize this, and they had them come back out, the team, and interact with all the Special Olympic athletes for a long time. They took a lot of pictures, and the guys really seemed to enjoy it, and the athletes loved it. And that's where shortly thereafter, EJ was doing his post-game interview with Mike Pratt, and some of the players, as the gathering with the Special Olympics athletes was breaking up, P.J. Washington, Ashton Hagens, I forget who else, there were two or three other guys, maybe it was Keldon was one of them, that they brought water bottles over and doused E.J. Montgomery from behind. So sort of a kind of a Gatorade bath there for E.J. Kevin Grevey's on the line with us. Kevin, thank you for joining us. Give me a quick thought on the improvement you've seen in your alma mater from when we lost talk shortly after the Duke game.
Wow. That's pretty dramatic, isn't it, Tom? Who would have thought that they would become one of the better defenses in the country? They're deep. They're getting great play off the bench, finally. Probably the most improved player that I've seen personally scouting this year has been P.J. Washington, and his emergence as a complete player, you know, rebounding, obviously, his defense has been terrific. He's passing the ball better. He's stretching the floor. He's kind of been the guy that has, the others have followed, you know, when they really needed it most, maybe a month ago. So it's been great to see. Of course, Hagans and his emergence, the freshmen are all getting better, but it seems like they got that point guard now that, can really set the defense, the tone with his ball harassment on the perimeter and funnel those guys into the paint where Kentucky has shot blockers now. You know, Nick Richards play off the bench, E.J. Montgomery. They've all really contributed nicely, and they just seem to continue to get better.
You scout games all over the country for the NBA, and Cal was saying something yesterday in our pregame interview about P.J., his message to all of his guys, he keeps saying numbers don't matter. And I think mainly he's focusing on points, that don't focus on how many points you're scoring. And he said with PJ, he said pro scouts have taken notice of the fact that his assist-to-turnover ratio was a negative last year, and it's about even this year and kind of trending toward being positive.
Yeah, that's a good point, Tom. I mean, his improvement has pretty much been in every statistical category. His free throw shooting, his leadership, you know, he was kind of a passive, just let it happen, wait for it to happen kind of player last year and even early in this season. But he has really taken charge. He has the ability. He could score 20, 22, 24 points a game almost every game if that's what the Cats really wanted from him. I remember in the Seton Hall game, in their loss in overtime, I was sitting courtside, and I think PJ had maybe 24, 25, 27 points, and they were so easy. You know, he would catch it down the lane, turn over his shoulder for his little half hook, a couple spin move dunks, he stepped down, hit shots, and I was like, wow. This guy can really score the ball. I mean, I think he was like 9 of 11 from the free throw line in that game as well. But that's not really how he makes a mark on this team. Maybe in the pros he'll be more of a scorer. He needs to play at the high post, swing the ball, secondary passer, finding Reed Travis down, you know, because Reed Travis is more of a pain eater, and so he sacrificed some of the opportunities to score in the low post by going to the high post, swinging the ball out to shooters, and kicking the ball down low, and then following up his pass with his offensive rebounds. And, you know, every missed shot is a pass to yourself if you have that ability to go get it, and he does, and he's really tracking rebounds down more. And he's a rim protector when he wants to be. And this is a guy who's, what, about 6'8", 6'9"?
Yeah, but he's got that long,
a long wingspan.
Long wingspan. Kevin?
Plays bigger than he wants to, and he's also can play small by putting the ball on the floor. So he's a special talent, and I'm not the only scout that loves the guy.
I got to run. I appreciate it. We'll holler at you again closer to tournament time. Thank you.
Okay, Tom. See you. Bye now.
Kevin Greavy. We'll see you tomorrow on the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs.
The Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to